नमस्ते।
गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल। आई'ड लाइक टू बिगिन विद एक्सप्लोरिंग द वर्ड्स, द पर्पस ऑफ लाइफ इज टू रियलाइज द सेल्फ। अ ब्रीफ एक्सप्लोरेशन आफ्टर विच Anyone who wants to ask a question or share anything is most welcome to. You see, this realizing the self, self with a capital S, means seeing what is not the self, which is the myself, the self with a lowercase s. There are various words used: the totality, unity consciousness, the source, God, and so on and so forth. So this teaching is to explore manifest life and living, and to see what is this capital S self behind the appearance. The appearance is one of little me's, little me and my stories, each a personal story. For example, apples on an apple tree. We see individual apples, but each apple is sustained by a life force coming from the branch of the tree. So the source of life for each apple is the same. The one source, one life, one consciousness. What happens in life and daily living, because of the nature of the appearance, what the eyes of duality see, subject and object, we lose sight of this one life, one source consciousness behind it all. So we take the appearance for the reality and we compare and we judge. Big apple, small apple, unripe apple, ripe apple, rotten apple. So because we have got lost in this realm of duality, dualistic perception, our interaction with the world, the foundation of which is relationships of every conceivable kind, is restricted to what we see, hear, taste, smell, and touch. And it is this obsession with personhood, with individual apples, assuming they are fully in charge of how they look and behave. It is this perception that causes psychological suffering. The sage is aware constantly that everything is the expression of the one self, the one source consciousness. Thereafter, the sage continues to live his life day by day, relationship by relationship, knowing fully well that his relationship is not with individuals, but with God, the one self. So How does this translate to a change in daily living? As the American mystic Joel Goldsmith said, we start reinterpreting the picture which is presented to us. So, for example, if someone behaves a certain way, pushes our buttons, whatever you may call it, we now see that everyone is an instrument through whom this source consciousness functions. Everyone has been designed a certain way based on their conditioning and their genetics, which means their nature. And on the basis of this, they say things and do things. Now, when I accept this fundamental concept that the primal doer is the source appearing as individuals, I start taking things less personally, which means it is the beginning of the end of personhood. Otherwise, all my life I will blame and condemn and hate people, have ill will towards them. And so on and so forth. Now, with this realization, I find my engagement with a person has started transforming, changing. It has become more objective. For now, I know that just like the other has been shaped by their environment, conditioning and so on, so too have I. So now we are on an equal ground. The mind is free of the burden of doership. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse 27. The burden of doership. Constantly looking for heroes and villains in my life story. So, what would this realizing the self mean? If I was to merge the wisdom teachings of Ramana Maharshi, Joel Goldsmith, Ramesh Balsekar, it would mean giving up the belief in two powers, as Goldsmith would say, which would in turn mean the realization lived that consciousness is all there is. Without that life force, no tree, no branch, no apples, whether rotten or ripe. The famous words, since Christmas is coming up, where the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Where the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. It is not referring to a location like a church or temple or your own personal altar. It is referring to one's own consciousness. If I have the full understanding that God is the only doer, then individuals are no longer on my mind like they used to be. It is God. Where the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. There is freedom. I free people from the shackles of doership I bound them in. And I free myself of the same too, in my own consciousness. That liberty means the end of the thinking mind that is almost always operating in the dead past or an imaginary future. It is the death of the thinking mind because its foundation is the sense of doership, and that is what is now exposed, annihilated. Now, how does that change things? In practical terms, situations I face day by day. Let's say someone owes me money. Earlier, my money. He owes me money. He has defaulted on his payment. How dare he? I'm going to take him to court, or so on and so forth. Now, a new dimension opens up. Money was lent. It has not been paid back. Whatever the reasons may be, A, B, C, D. This is the situation at hand. How do I deal with it? This is when the buddhi starts working, not clouded by the mind, which is mired in condemnation and blame. This is Ganpati, the Lord of Wisdom, seeing not with the eyes of duality, but the eye of singularity. And some new thoughts may emerge that perhaps this person needs the money more than me. Earlier, even this much of a window was not open for this realization. And then I weigh my options. Should I pursue? Should I not pursue? Should I do this? Should I not do that? Because life must go on. But living off life without the burden of doership makes my life simpler, more equanimous, more peaceful, knowing that whatever is meant to happen will happen, and whatever is not meant to happen won't happen. Yet, all I can do in a given situation is take a decision, knowing the results have never been in my control. I find with this approach, there are fewer battles to fight. If one wants to fight battles all one's life, there will be no shortage of enemies. Now, this realization of the self has a certain quality to it. One could call it a silence. But the ego deluded thinks it is an experience. It is a state to be achieved. And because the ego is hooked onto experiences, it starts looking in the wrong direction. It is one's natural state. That is why Nisargadatta Maharaj said, realized people are very quiet. He didn't mean just that they speak less. He was referring to the quietness of the mind. The tongue, we are aware of it only when we have tasty food, spicy, not spicy, salty, not salty. But when we are not eating, one could say the tongue is resting in silence. This silence is what perhaps Ramana Maharshi was referring to when he said the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. And so, as Goldsmith said, as time goes by, when a teaching like this is absorbed, accepted first, it could be rejected, absorbed, It takes time because years and years of old conditioning are being overridden. That conditioning which causes, one could say, knee-jerk reactions. It takes time. And he uses two very pragmatic words. A constant reinterpretation of what is going on. Earlier me, how it approached it, the new way of seeing. A constant reinterpreting of the picture presented to the consciousness. And a constant awareness of malpractice, seeing things the old way. Considering people as a power apart from God. When I realize my relationship with people, all, family, friends, colleagues, strangers, and the beggar on the road, when I realize my relationship with people reflects my relationship with God, when I realize my relationship with myself reflects my relationship with God, and when I realize my relationship with what happens in my life, pleasure or pain, reflects my relationship with God, then that is the journey of realizing the self. All right. If anyone would like to ask something or share something, they can do so now. Yes, Monica. Just one sec.
First of all, I'd like to tell you that I used to see your channels on my Sai Baba Devotee Speaks, and that is how I came to know about your viewpoint. My question that keeps bothering me is that if my free will is genetic and conditioned and my choices are God's will, then what is my kriyaman karam or my responsibility towards the actions which I'm taking now? Like the thought process is also under, that is because the outcome is God's will. And whatever I have to, whatever I'm doing is my genetic and conditioning. Then what, then the thoughts that are coming to my mind are also predestined, or like, what is my responsibility in the present life towards my life? Like, what is my kriyaman karam then?
So in fact, this teaching allows one to live one's kriyaman karma out. When we have seen that our free will is most certainly the mechanism to be deployed, my free will to take a decision. With this understanding of non-doership, I will find that I can in fact take a decision where I'm not mired in the decision-making process, because I know that ultimately it is God's decision, and I am not lost in possible outcome scenarios which may be fearful, which may be confusing. I am operating in the pristine present moment. The example often given by my teacher is a surgeon performing a surgery. And he is very experienced. He sees what are the surgeries lined up for tomorrow and is very clear based on his experience what he is going to do. His working mind is deployed 100%. Now, his colleague tells him that so-and-so patient you are going to be operating on is a very influential politician. And you better be careful, because if anything is even slightly off or slightly wrong, you could be in trouble. Your reputation, your job could suffer. Now what happens? The thinking mind is triggered. The thinking mind based on doership. If I do something, something will happen. And what happens when the thinking mind is triggered? I am no longer in the present moment. I am living in an imaginary future. Now, who can perform Kriyaman Karma optimally in these two scenarios? The person who is in vertical time, in the present moment, here and now, can perform pristine Kriyaman Karma. In the second instance, the ego based on doership is now losing its foundation. It is now shaky, fearful of an outcome which may or may not happen based on what I am doing. So nothing changes in daily living. We still have to take a decision. We still have to exercise our free will. But now we know that it is the me with its sense of doership, which is the burden in taking that decision. This understanding lifts that burden and allows me to take a more objective decision, exercising my free will in a given situation. That is what happens. In fact, what you have asked is the entire game. It does not mean that what the decision you take is going to be a right decision. No outcomes can be guaranteed. But because this has been understood, this concept of free will has been understood. It is a mechanism in daily living. I have to exercise it. I have to decide when I'm in a shop, I want to buy a dress and I like to, which of the two to buy. I have to exercise my free will. Indeed. So that is the way it is seen.
But is it the free will, or it is again that whatever has to happen will happen, like that
That
dress
is.
is meant for me?
Yes, that is always now operating in the background. So that burden of taking that decision, I don't carry anymore. I'm glad we are using a simple example as buying a dress. That burden that, oh, I chose the wrong dress. Oh my God, I look so terrible in it. What was I doing by buying that dress in the shop? What was I thinking? All these thoughts are based on doership, and we get caught and trapped in them. So when this is understood, all that is wiped out. And free will is seen, or rather exposed, for what it is. It is, there's
Put
really
it.
nothing else besides what is the delivery of this peace and equanimity.
Right. So if I put it down to my relationships, like if I supposing I'm supposed to meet the people who they say that whoever comes to your path has some pre-karmic connect to you. So they are coming in my life, and according to my destiny, I'll be going through the people I'm meeting. So in one context in science, Satcharitra Baba says that be cautious of certain people. I mean, you have to keep the company of good people. Like then I get confused, like if a certain person has to be in my life and then I have to be cautious, like that confuses me.
No, in
I hope you get my point, what I'm saying.
100%, you see, Baba was not impractical. He was telling his disciples that you still have to navigate through life's journey. So be careful, tread carefully, but knowing that everyone is me. It doesn't mean I become lax. It doesn't mean I let people walk all over me. None of that. He didn't mean that. You see? So,
So if we are taking the same consciousness,
as
sorry,
my teacher would say, don't leave your car unlocked. You see? But when something happens, which I don't like, this understanding is there. It came my way unasked, unexpected. As Maharaj said, what comes unasked is what is meant for you. Thereafter, how do I deal with the situation? That is what happens.
Basic conflict was this only, like, you know, okay, like things are meant to happen, then what is my free will? If it is all conditioned, then what is the action that I am taking? So that I is not existing, but then what everybody says, do karmas, do good karmas in this life. Then if everything is predestined and conditioning and genetic, then how far my free will can work with me?
I agree with you completely. I don't know what everybody is referring to. All you can do is precisely that which you think and feel you should do in a given situation. And the burden is completely removed when you know that behind your decision are forces which were never in your control. Yet, you must live out the lifespan. You must take what, according to you, are the right decisions to take and thereby navigate life's journey. But you are now at peace knowing that what is meant to happen will happen. It does not mean sitting back and doing nothing, because that would also be doership. If it is your nature to do something about a situation, one honors that nature. This is precisely what was mentioned when Lord Krishna told Arjuna, you were born a warrior, you were trained all your life to be a warrior, you are designed to fight. But you putting your bow and arrow down, saying, oh, I will not kill my preceptors, means you have assumed yourself to be the doer. Whereas I, as time, have already killed them, and you are merely the instrument through whom the killing will happen. So pick up the bow and fight.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yes, Vivek.
Pranam
No.
Gautam ji. Though the talk has been very lucid, it still appears a bit abstract to me. It's my first session. My original question was to seek explanation on how to go about deconditioning the conditioning we have received unknowingly through these years of living. But the question which Monica ji asked, she used a word, Kriyaman Karma. I don't even know what that is, which sort of corroborates my thinking at the moment that maybe I'm listening to a PhD thesis while sitting in a nursery class.
No, in fact, it's the opposite. You are listening to a nursery thesis. Life has become the PhD. It is all very simple. Let's forget about the word Kriyaman Karma, which means nothing but my action in the present moment, to put it in a nutshell. We cannot decondition our conditioning. That has already happened. What happened in childhood, what happened in my teenage years, happened. But the burden we carry is, this happened to me, and these are the people in my life who were responsible for that as individual doers of their actions. This burden, my conditioned burden, where I was finger pointing at only people in my life and myself, condemning myself, hating myself. It is this burden of doership on my past conditioning which is now being looked at in a different light. This looking at in a different light is the fresh conditioning. So you cannot decondition what happened already, but you now see it in a different perspective. And not only do you see it in a different perspective, going forward on your life's journey, the events which happen, the people you meet, your own reactions are all seen in this new light. You call this new conditioning. So one could say, if one is a bit technical about it, that the new conditioning transforms the earlier conditioning. And then you find maybe 1 year passes, 2 years pass, and now you're used to this new way of seeing, which you didn't have in your childhood or in your earlier years. And you realize, my God, I am so much more peaceful now with this new way of seeing than I was when I was not exposed to it. This is called awakening to a new way of living one's daily life. Yet, it takes time because the old conditioning has a habit of constantly coming up. So it takes time. Awakening happens, yet old conditioning keeps coming up. But by and by, I find that I am living this new understanding, trying my best maybe to live this new understanding. And I am more and more at peace till one fine day, I realize that someone said something which would have really disturbed and upset me 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and I didn't feel like that anymore. Then you know that deliverance has happened. What is deliverance? When awakening is functioning in daily living, I know I have been delivered, so to speak. I know I am now driving through heavy traffic without the least mental stress.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Rahul.
Namaste, Guruji.
Namaste.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to ask question. So my question was related to self-inquiry. So the question was, I tend to sit in the meditation, close my eyes, and then meditate on this question on who am I. So the question is, whenever I try to find out this answer to this particular question, what I see is thoughts or the blank space which the mind is seeing. So according to the gurus, they say that as to whom this blankness is appearing. So I ask this question, then it intuitively gives me the thing that it is me who is looking at it. But then again, because it is like eyes opening outwards, the mind is looking at things outside. So the mind's direction of seeing is outside. It is not at itself. So I'm stuck there that whenever I sit there, either I'm listening to something, or either I'm seeing the, either I'm experiencing the thoughts, or either I'm seeing some or the other things, thinking about something, but not with that particular observer. So if I see that observer without anything else, so I'll be at peace that this is who I am, and I am not these thoughts, I am not these things. So I'm not able to do that. So if you could explain me how can I do that, so it will be really helpful.
But honestly, I don't think you need to be explained that, because what you started by saying is, if the thought arises on even the slightest investigation, there's a blankness and blank space. You are already there. You see, what is this process of self-inquiry? When a thought arises, I investigate, where is this thought coming from? I go backwards, so to speak. Is this me? Who am I? Who is this me who is claiming this thought? Now, if that whole process has dissolved and there is just stillness, blankness, then it just rests there. And of course, when I engage my senses, thoughts will arise. But what is being exposed is the one who is claiming these thoughts as mine. Thoughts are bound to arise and actions will be performed. Self-inquiry is to expose the little me, which foundation is doership. So honestly, I feel that perhaps you are trying too hard when you don't need to. You see, Rahul, many people will not even be able to comprehend your first statement that you immediately fall into this space. And my suggestion is to just rest in that. Just rest in that. I
Okay,
know it
Guru.
may sound too simple, but it is. You see, because the sense of doership is so ingrained in us, we cannot believe that there's a possibility that I am not the doer of my actions. So if something happens, I see something, a certain action happens, this process pulls me back. What is this action based on? Okay, it is based on my conditioning. Who is this me? And it kind of reverses the scene. And it brings the realization that there was a false claim of owning the action. And that is dissolved. So who am I does not get an answer. It is the dissolving of everything else. Who you are not.
Guruji, one more question. Is it practically possible for us that in the waking state, like waking state, we are with that and all the other things are absent? Like there is no thought, there is no sight, the mind is not going outward. Is it possible that way to live?
I would mention it in a more pragmatic way. It is possible to live with absolute peace and equanimity through the day.
Okay, Guruji. Thank you.
You see, because we are not functioning in an ashram environment, which is a conditioned environment, lesser disturbance, everyone is there pursuing self-inquiry and so on. We are engaging with the world. We will meet situations, we will meet people. But we find that we are anchored so deeply in peace that our peace of mind is not disturbed. Maybe sometimes just a ripple on the surface at the most, and then the involvement is cut off. That is what happens. Just as you could say Ramana Maharshi would get up early, cut the vegetables, go about his work, have his bath, so on and so forth. That is also what he was doing in his daily living. You see, he had to deal with situations. He had to reply to letters which came. So the working mind was fully engaged. And we, in daily living, living in cities, towns, most likely working, we have to engage with the life around us, our relationship with it, and the test of the teaching is our experience of peace and harmony in daily living. As simple as that. All right. Thank you. Those were very nice questions. Yes, Suresh.
Hari Ram, Gautamji.
Yes.
So first of all, I'm really looking forward to meeting you in 54 days in Thirunamalai. It's all stars aligned. So you know, really looking forward to that. I just wanted to you know, share. I think one of the most profound lectures.
Sorry, Suresh, I think you're breaking up.
Maybe I need to somebody else.
I don't know if it's my connection or yours, but I'll just come back to you, Suresh. We'll just take someone else first and come back to Suresh. Yes, Chetan.
Namaste, Gautamji.
Namaste.
I just want to briefly say that I received a lot from you some years ago when I was going through like a lot of stress at work and changes in my life. And it brought so much grounding, so much centeredness that I had never, I had been on some other paths, Advaita related, but I had never, somehow it made it very touchable in daily life. So yeah, very thankful. And now I have a question also, or something that you can reflect on for me, please. I had some shifts of situation, and I ended up basically I got more time on hand, and then I started engaging more in spiritual practice, and then exactly some good things happened in that process. But exactly what you had mentioned in this talk, that my mind or ego somehow started chasing after states, or started to create a separation between God and the world, really. And then and now I'm somehow like I found I was starting to suffer that now. So then I came back to teachings like yours, and I was reminded, as today's been very nice, I was also reminded how Eckhart Tolle, many, many years ago, I heard him say that we go very deeply, but not towards a goal anywhere else. Somehow he was talking about like this, like now, right? That's what he says. But I was wondering whether like also we could relate that to bhakti, how God, you often talk about God, and how we can meet God now with intensity. I don't want to lose the intensity that comes, but I don't want to put that goal somewhere else, like you had said just in this talk earlier. I don't know, please.
Well, Chetan, I feel what I've spoken about is meeting God all the time.
Yes.
When you meet people, you meet God.
Yeah.
When you meet situations in your life, you meet God. So God is not apart.
Yes.
In fact, the briefest and most lovely definition of God is what is. There's no power apart from God. And that is why when this is a lived experience, forget about reaching a state. When it is a lived experience, you will have someone like a Ramana Maharshi insisting that if any special food is got to him, it is cut in equal pieces for all his devotees, and he get the same size and not a bigger size of the piece. That to me is bhakti. When it is a lived experience, when it is not a selfish me-based experience of bhakti, but when, or as Goldsmith says, he speaks a lot about the statement, love thy neighbor as thyself, and what that means. Because if there is only one self, how can one not love thy neighbor as thyself? You see? That seeing of God in all, the manifest world is a reflection of consciousness within consciousness, not apart from it. Otherwise, there would be two. The manifest world is a reflection of the source within itself. This understanding and living of it is the ultimate bhakti. No power is there apart from God. And so, rather than a state to be achieved in meditation, and my daily living is a mess, my relationships are a mess, rather than waiting for that moment of realization so everything is transformed, why not give some help along the way? That is why Maharaj said, the road is the goal. The road is the goal. All right?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Ganesh.
Namaskar, Guruji.
Namaste.
So, first of all, thanks for taking up this particular webinar. And also, you know, my friend Rahul have posted a question. We have this habit of making the simplest truth as complicated as possible. The monkey mind has that kind of a particular trait. So we'll go through, you know, we just have to, if you want to touch our nose, we'll go through the round way, and we will have so much of, you know, hard work, disturbance and all. So first of all, my first question is how to control, how to curb that kind of complication or complexity. That's my first question. The second question is that Nisargadatta Maharaj, in his books, most of his books have used a particular word, earnestness. Can you please explain that word in, you know, in detail? These are my two questions. That's it. Thank you.
So the first question is, one can only witness the nature of the mind for being what it is. It has to be seen. One cannot try to control the mind, because that is the ego coming in through the back door, because you see, the ego loves control. So it wants to control everything. And that can be an exercise in frustration. When the mind is active, when it is overworking, the seeing that this is the nature of the mind creates a wedge between the active mind and the witnessing of it. That is all that is required. And by, that mind will lose its compulsion to do cartwheels all the time, because it is not being focused on. The spotlight is not being put on it all the time with the endeavor to control it. Who is to control what? The thinking mind is trying to control the thinking mind. You see, it is endless. It is to be left to its own devices. And that is why Maharaj said that if you are entering a crowded railway station, you just have to find your way between the people. You don't have to fight your way, fight with each and every one of them. Just find your way through it. So we have to allow the mind to be the mind and not claim ownership of it. And it will lose its force over time. That is what happens. So regarding this first question, would you like to ask anything else? Because it must be understood that the ego has to give up trying to control the mind. Yes, practices can be deployed, like pranayama, like meditation. These are aids, but we are now talking about through the day, the active mind. And what was the second question again? Sorry, I can't hear you.
Guruji, it is about earnestness.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Because Maharaj does a very simple thing. He trusted his guru. He have done nothing. He trusted his guru, his words, and he have done whatever he would done for 3 hours a day. He set out some time and he got enlightened. So how can it be that was simple? You know, that's what baffles me. And
you
do
see,
this
that,
simple.
That is different. That was an unconditioned mind which came to the master and accepted what the master said as the truth, because there was no reason to reject it. In fact, as he would say that, you know, he was a simple-minded man, even in terms of education. So why would someone not wish him well? That was, you know, the approach. Now, earnestness means any attempt I can make, if something has appealed to me, a new way of understanding life, understanding people, seeing what things are about, all I can do is be earnest about seeing things this new way. So a situation arises or something happens, and the earnestness, what is the earnestness for, Ganesh? The earnestness is for peace. So my quest for this peace, when I know that I have seen enough in life, enough turbulence, enough ups and downs, enough thinking mind going on a rampage all the time, this quality of earnestness for this way of living, this way of being, which seems quite possible because there are masters before me who have expressed this way of being. If I'm earnest about that endeavor, then I find, as my teacher would say, if you take 10 steps, God will take 100 steps towards you. And if God has brought you so far, why do you think he will leave you here? So the earnest quest is to continuously see things in this new way and see the larger picture rather than the limited, restricted me and my story picture. And this earnestness results in what Maharaj refers to as grace being bestowed. And therefore his emphasis on earnestness. Yet, of course, earnestness can arise only if it is the will of God. No doubt about that. But at least the master is giving a pointer that if you want something, be earnest about it. You see, if you want a material object, whatever it may be, you will be as earnest as you can to achieve that, to buy that, to get that. And so if this quest is to discover who you truly are, be earnest about the quest. That is what he's pointing to. All right. Thank you. Yes, Jyoti.
Gautam, I want to bless you for coming into my life and helping me in different difficult situations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Blessings are always welcome.
Yeah. So, my first question is, I have gone through a personal tragedy just last month. And I want to ask you, because people keep on saying that it is because of your past karma. But as Ramesh Palsekar, and as you say, everything is predetermined, preordained. Then how did I make some bad karma in my last life to suffer in this life? And the second question is, Gautam, I'm sorry. If you say God is kind, God comes and helps people, then in my case, why did God not turn up when I needed help?
I agree with you completely. I agree with you completely on both fronts. Whose past karma?
Yes.
Yet some people are given more pain than pleasure in this lifetime. And it is pain, suffering, which makes them wonder what is life about. Then the quest to find something of real value and meaning begins. And that is why Ramana Maharshi said, if not the first blow, then the second. If not the second, then the third. Eventually, when we receive enough blows in life, we start questioning what life is about. That is the start of the spiritual journey. And so, this cause-effect relationship where people freely give advice and tell me my past karmas are to blame, how does that help me in this life? Rather than telling me, I have a situation here and now in this moment, how do I deal with it? So the mind is always on this cause-effect relationship, joining the dots in a puzzle and trying to understand the larger picture. How can we, created objects, know the will of the source? Or as my teacher would say, how can a painting know why its painter painted it? You see? So someone who's on the journey, my earnest request is not to get swayed by all these explanations being given by, one could call well-wishers, who wish us well, but to stay centered to one teacher, one teaching, whatever it may be, which becomes like an anchor that takes one through life's journey. How can we tell someone who is in poverty, or let's say someone who has lost a loved one in a terrorist attack, God is kind?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, yes.
You see, I mean, there's talk of the war in Israel and Gaza. Can we tell the victims God is kind on either side? Is it relevant?
No.
So, God is precisely what is the totality, not the polaric opposites of good and evil. Good and evil are polaric opposites like left and right, front and back, up and down, black and white, night and day, pleasure and pain. These are the polarities of life. We live in a dualistic framework. But the source, the one source consciousness, has manifest as the duality of life in daily living. We get confused and we think God is only one polarity. God is only the good. Yes, in a sense, how? It is the human mind based on separation, mired in hatred and malice, which has created a lot of troubles, no doubt about it. That is why we are suffering in this dualistic world. That part can be seen. But otherwise, isn't God both and neither at the same time? So you see, one has to be careful because we can go deeper into a well of suffering when people tell us all these things, when they haven't for themselves investigated their own lives, asked themselves very hard questions. And so my suggestion is not to get demotivated or down when you hear all these things, but rather take that one thing and hold its hand, and that will take you through the samsara. Samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti, as the Buddha had said. And then he added, they are not two, which means peace of mind is to be found through the samsara. Not by escaping it, not by wishing it away. And earnestness, as we spoke about earlier with Ganesh, will take us very far. Sukha Shanti. That even when pain arises, the total acceptance that it is the will of God, I lose my story that I created over the pain, which was causing me mental anguish and suffering. Pain arises in the moment. So be it. So be it. All right. One last question. Yes, Pooja.
Namaste, Gautam. First of all, I'd like to thank you for whatever I've heard of your videos, your words, and I think what lies between them also. So my prayer is that even when I'm speaking, I may falter, but please see what's between them also. I have I think I'm having an issue of being in between. So it's like the conditioned mind comes up and it is seen, and it because it's seen, it looks worse than what it was. It may not have been worse because things have dissolved, the many relationships have improved, situations have improved, there's a lot of grace. But when the conditioned mind comes up, I feel many things are worse. So what appears as this small self looks worse than what it was even before. The interaction of the self between the environment is more ragged, more jerky. And even the environment tends to throw more challenges. Is it really possible? Because the only example I could think of was one video where I heard Ramesh ji speaking, and he says, when we want and we pray for the ego to dissolve, it's just like a doll of salt, which when dipped into the ocean has to melt. There's no doll left after that. So for me, I think I'm just this partially dipped doll of salt, which is now ragged and rough and looks worse and is so not able to deal with the environment, gets stuck with all the fibers of the environment. So I'm suffering. I just the dissolving the prayer was that I need to dissolve, and it's just getting worse. Can the environment become worse? Because I feel even the challenges that I increased are an answer to my prayer, so I should be thankful. But I don't even know now any longer what is prayer. So there's gratitude for the problems, and yet the dissolving is very painful. And the ego is just showing up, trying to show its last bits of the vestiges, remnants. I'm very troubled with the ego.
You see, Pooja, ignorance is bliss, isn't it? When we live a life of ignorance, we are not even aware of the ego and its antics. Now, through our teaching, when our torchlight, a spotlight is put on the ego and its antics, you say, my God, I can't believe what I'm seeing now. So the light of awareness does this. Earlier, there was ignorance. We had no idea. We were suffering unconsciously, one could say. And not only suffering unconsciously, causing tremendous suffering for others. Then a teaching came in, the spotlight was put, and the ego and its antics are being exposed. And one is horrified, my God, even this. So it is not that it is happening more. It has come more into the realm of awareness. That is what has happened. As Goldsmith would say, then even for the slightest transgression, there is suffering. Earlier, suffering in unawareness, now suffering in awareness. Now, this process, as you have so rightly described, can be very painful. But the earnestness lies in just asking oneself this question. While it is a painful process, do I know in which situation, in which encounter today, I am losing my peace, and in which I am at peace? And where I am losing my peace, I must be honest and ask myself, why am I losing my peace? And I should try to trace that, whether it is based still on the mistaken notion that people and myself are the doers of their actions. So this much honestness, this much earnestness is required. And if I do find that I am still operating on old conditioning, I have to accept this fact that the new conditioning will come in when it is meant to. I should not fight with the situation. If I find that by and large I am at peace and it's only these small things which are really troubling me, by and large my peace quotient has increased, then I just have to hold on to that peace and let these remaining bits which are antagonizing me fall apart on their own. Some call this process the dark night of the soul. Even that has to be witnessed. But if you find that overall you are much less at peace than you were before this teaching, then that means the teaching has not been understood. Or maybe you are rejecting aspects of the teaching because you don't agree with them. Even that is fair. Many people are not drawn to these words, thy will be done, nobody is the doer of their actions. So they veer away from this teaching because this teaching is not destined for them. It is not a judgment on them. So these questions you must ask yourself. Where do I stand in relation to the teaching? Is it that because my awareness is amplified, the smallest of things are coming up? And what are they based on when they come up? Are they still based on the notion that people are the doers of their actions? And you will find your own answers and allow this process to be witnessed objectively, and you might just enjoy it. Even while the suffering is there, you might see, wow, even this, wow, even this. It all starts getting exposed in the light of awareness. That is what happens. The light shineth in the darkness comprehendeth not. The light shineth in the darkness. That is the light of awareness. darkness of the ego, separation, sense of doership, comprehend it not. But there is no choice. Darkness cannot survive the light. That itself, accepting this darkness cannot survive the light, means I am surrendering to the light. Whatever I am going through, I am offering to the light. I can't handle this anymore. So it is being offered. That is the surrender. Offer it all.
So is the light the observer? The observer is the light.
The light is all there is. The light is all there is. You could say the light is the witness. The ego is the observer, because observing means judging.
Yes.
The light is the witness, the ground of witnessing, the ground of being. Whatever you are going through, you are aware of that. Who is the one who is aware of that? You see?
And so the surrender is the prayer.
You could
say
that.
Surrender is the prayer.
Not my will.
Because I no longer understand. Because I don't no longer understand what is prayer. The more I get into this path, the deeper I get. I don't even know what is prayer, what is the relevance, or what is the meaning of prayer any longer. Because one needs to be the ego to be able to pray, to be away from it or to let go of it. And if one is not the ego, then there is no prayer.
Exactly.
I don't.
That is why my teacher would say the only true prayer is a prayer of gratitude. Gratitude to God. The rest, as he would say, is a form of begging. And for me, the true prayer is not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. So I would say to you, please don't consider your glass half empty. Consider it half full. I'm repeating myself, I know that. But if the source, God, consciousness has brought you thus far, why assume it will leave you midway? Why assume that?
And that the doll will dissolve.
Yes. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll just sit in silence for a minute or two. Thank you.